Hello, everyone. Very excited to have Michael Hudlow with us today. Now, we're going to be talking about a subject quite close to my heart, which is CRM. So Michael, being a specialist at this, is an author and industry expert with a very deep understanding of CRM systems and implementation. He's just released a best-selling book called How Not to Fuck Up a CRM System. And post that has been quite a sought-after speaker to talk to people about the complexities of CRM implementations and how you can get the best out of them. So that's pretty cool. So I'm super excited to have somebody who's a real expert in this space. I can't say I'm an expert, but it's an area that I know companies can get a tremendous amount of value from, and especially startups. What is the right type of CRM to start off with? How does the process work? So, Michael, awesome to have you along with us for the ride today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Nicholas. Yeah, I appreciate being on the show, and I have to say I'm equally excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's just talk about the book first. So why did this book come about? We'll go into some of the complexities of CRM or the no complexities about CRM, but let's maybe talk about what spurred you on to write this book, and yeah, what has the sort of critical response been?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So you'd mentioned already the name of the book, and I have to say that some of the title of the book was meant to be obviously to help people say, wow, that's different. And I intended it to be different. And there, you know, there's a little bit of salesmanship there. But the reality is that I wrote the book out of frustration. You know, a few years ago, doing a lot of consulting work and obviously operational work within the CRM and large system space, I kept seeing the same mistakes happen time and time again. Independent or regardless of the brand of CRM system that you were using. And I just said, you know, seriously, I can remember when I sat down and my first sentence I wrote to myself was, this is a book coming from the trenches. And, you know, so often when you see business books or more specifically technology related business books, it's always about, you know, here are the 10 things to do to set up a this, and here are the 5 things to do that. And I'm like, you know what? I've had enough of these people telling me what I should be doing. I want to know what I'm doing already wrong, and why does everyone keep doing the same wrong things time and time again? So, you know, I wrote it in somewhat of a, you know, humorous point of view, but it's intended to be serious. And I have to say, when I started the book, I was really writing a lot for myself, and it actually ended up being very therapeutic for myself. And when I got done, I really felt like, at least to myself, that I had accomplished something.
So I think let's just go back one step for those who have no idea what we're talking about, which is, what is a CRM? Yeah.
Well, here's the irony in that question and the irony of my answer. Everyone on this call is already using a CRM, meaning you might use your email system and, you know, your Excel spreadsheet or a notepad of paper, but you already have a CRM system. It just might be terrible or it might work perfectly for you. But, you know, it's really about, you know, a CRM at its core is a system, and you can translate the word system to technology. You can translate the word system to process or your method. But really, a CRM is, how do I retain and maximize the use of the people I know to help myself with my own business development activities? And how do I get from where I am today to doing more of what I want to do? And how do the people find me if they need what I sell or what I produce or what service I offer or whatever that may be? So, you know, it really doesn't matter if it's a small company or a large company or even an individual. You're already are using CRMs. In today's vernacular, you think of the CRMs are technical systems that are, and if you even understand technology, even at its most basic level, It is a giant database or databases or spreadsheet, whatever you understand best, that interact with each other to help you determine who you know, how well you know them, how often you should speak with them, how often they buy stuff from you, and then help you make some type of business development activity to pursue down the right path to better yourself and or your customers.
So that's a really nice summary. I want to talk about one of my bugbears about CRM systems.
I have many.
Or software as a service offerings at the moment. You can almost not call a lot of these CRM systems pure CRM systems because they are just adding on, like barnacles, new things, AI, they're adding the sales aspects, they're just adding and adding and adding, and they're becoming more ERP systems or EPM systems as well. But they're just adding in, like I saw Salesforce is one of the companies you worked on. And theoretically, I'd see that as a CRM system, but it's also got a whole bunch of other modules, a whole bunch of other technologies that are just plugged in and in and in into them, making them into this big monster. And I think anyone coming new into companies or into these systems, what started out as a very simple CRM system has now metastasized into some, you know, gigantic AI bot, which can solve everything. And perhaps you can talk about the difference between a CRM system, an EPM system, an ERP system, and how that industry is becoming more complicated.
Well, you said it more eloquently than I, and I'm going to start using the word metastasize myself now because I like the way that. Now, I don't like the word metastasize, but yeah. In context of this, you're 100% right. True story, maybe in 2018, I was at an event, a nice event in Manhattan, and actually Marc Benioff, who is the CEO of Salesforce, was there. And I actually ended up watching an NBA game with him, and we were just talking all evening. And he asked me, hey, you know, tell me something, what could be improved? You know, a great question from a CEO that I truly do think cares. And I said, you know what? You're not expecting this one, but the first thing I would do is change the name of your company from Salesforce. Because at the time, I was having challenge with, you know, a lot about the problem with CRM systems in larger entities is just overall adoption, the internal adoption of users within the company. And I said, unless the person that you are trying to get to adopt is a salesperson, they don't want to use your system because they think, wait a minute, not for me. I'm a professional services person. You call me a salesperson. Those are fighting words, you know? And you know, I know that's not exactly what you asked, but it is relevant to the chronology of the growth of that particular system where it started off, to use your words, you know, smaller and then just kept growing and growing and growing and growing. So, and these systems, you are 100% correct that any one of them, you know, the big guys, and it's going to be the medium-sized guys in the not-too-distant future as well. But if you take the Salesforce, the Oracles, the SAPs, Microsoft, I don't know if you could truly have a great conversation, an intellectual conversation with someone about how is CRM and ERPs and systems like that, you know, how are they different? I think the better conversation is, what are they doing that's the same? And the overlap is enormous. You know, I have been criticized, but I've also humorously made this comment that I said, you know, like with reference to any one of the ones I just mentioned, I said, you give me 30 days and you could tell me, make my CRM, make myself a piece of toast in the morning. And I guarantee you, I can do it. I don't know why you would want to do it, but I could make it happen. And my point being is, to your question, is they can do and are capable of doing most things at a corporation. So it becomes very hard to evaluate, you know, why do I need a new accounting system, or why do I need a Workday or an HR tool when all these tools now kind of cohabitate in the same space? And it's going to make for an interesting future because, you know, you that old adage of, you know, not putting all your eggs in one basket. Well, it's going to get harder not to put your eggs in one basket unless you purposely spread it out. But then if you purposely spread it out, meaning your different components of your ecosystem, then you're never going to maximize the power and to justify the cost of these mega systems. So I don't have an answer for you other than to say you're right. They are grabbing everywhere. And the AI component you just mentioned is actually the topic of my book coming out in the next month or so, which is about the joining of AI and to CRM systems and quite frankly, how to maximize the ROI associated with them, because these systems, generally speaking, are not cheap. And you know, there's a lot of displeasure out there with companies that have had CRM systems. Well, AI too, but CRM systems more specifically, that have had it for 2 or 3 years, have spent an enormous amount of money and say, are things really better and why? And that's also one of the topic matters of my book as well.
Yeah, I've been in the belly of the beast of the enterprise performance management side. So with Anaplan and Jedox and companies like that. And they started with this whole AI discussion a little bit before ChatGPT came out, and that must have thrown them for a little bit of a loop, because if one looks at the Microsoft, and you're talking about putting all your eggs in one basket, companies that have got Microsoft throw free things at you. They'll say, well, here's a free Copilot, here's a free EPM, here's a free XYZ. Whereas the specialized companies like the Anaplans and Jedoxes and other companies like that who are specifically focusing on one area are having to compete against a Microsoft. And this is with enterprise companies like your Kimberly Clarks and PepsiCo's and things like that. And Microsoft is honestly going to just squash a majority of these software companies, or buy them out. Because the decision making for, you know, technology folks like yourself is, do I integrate this with my accounting system, with my HR, with my, you know, all of my sales data, or do I have it spread out in different buckets? And that's a tough decision that, you know, the technology heads or integration folks need to consider, because it does make sense to keep it all within Microsoft because it all connects, but then you're stuck with one supplier.
Yeah, that's the fear. That's the fear of any of these for, you know, a CEO or, you know, that or a board of directors type of people, is that, what's the value, the balance between using a system and maximizing and getting out and leveraging the money and the technology that system can bring to you versus, to your point, you know, how much does that harm me at contract renegotiation? How much does that harm me if I don't like them anymore and I want to go to one of the other places? There's a good way to figure out that answer for a particular company, but generically there's no answer to that. I mean, I can't give an answer on that without talking to someone at a company and saying, you know, what is their value, you know? And you know, it comes down to, like, for example, Microsoft themselves actually has a leg up on the competition with regards to this, in my opinion, because, you know, there are many companies, I mean, I don't even know the number of that, are, you know, Microsoft shops, and you know, the CIO and the CPO have been using Microsoft for their entire professional career. So, wow, doesn't that make sense to stay within that? And as you said, if anyone here has been on a contract negotiation call with Microsoft before, is they just start throwing products at you that are like, hey, you buy this and you get two of these. And it's hard from a financial standpoint. And obviously that, you know, bravo to them. They're able to get themselves in that place. But you know, it's hard to combat that. And, you know, all the other players, Salesforce and SAP, can, you know, integrate into those worlds and say, you know, that's irrelevant. You shouldn't worry about if it's Microsoft or not. It's, is it compatible, and which is actually the best product to get, you know, what you want done. You know, I have to say there is a little bit of, in my opinion, an over fear about unplugging one of the systems and migrating to another of the big cloud-based guys. You know, it's, I've, you know, people are always worried, and at least, you know, from what I've seen of like dirty antics, I haven't seen that. So And I also, to be fair, I've really not seen much of a desire from a company to go from one huge system to another, except when in times of like, you know, merger and acquisition times when, you know, two companies are coming together. So,
yeah, well, trying to move from SAP to Microsoft or to Oracle, I mean, that's a multi-year
right. And I'm just talking about the CRM.
Love that. Yeah.
I'm just talking about the CRM slice. But no, you're right. Of course. Yeah. I mean, and also, you know, the companies that are going from these mega systems to another mega system generally have very deep pockets and also have long-term relationships with the huge consulting firm to accomplish those things.
So maybe we're going too big here. Let's dial it down a little bit, and let's imagine that you were going to start a CRM platform just for startups.
Mm-hmm.
What did that system look like?
Well, the good news, so, you know, there are many incredibly fantastic CRM systems out there for the smaller company. You know, top of mind is something like a HubSpot, you know, but there are many, you know, there are Pega and there's Sugar CRM. And if you did a Google search, the list is 50, 60 of them. And I have to say, and if you're in a niche market, you know, if you're you manufacture widgets or, you know, you are a medical field or whatever, there are CRMs that are, or a doctor's office, there are CRMs for every one of these things. And I would say the overwhelming majority of these things are very good at what they do. And so I would first do a search. I mean, let's just assume we say, hey, you know what? We're too big for Excel spreadsheets. We need to go to a formal system. I would do a search this is not many. You hire a person like me to help you do such a search. So, you know, one of the issues, good segue, one of the issues is that, you know, people don't understand the goals of why they think they need a CRM versus, you know, what they want versus what they think they want versus, you know, what are their true financial, assuming their financial goals, what are those things? And then you just do an alignment of those things. And, you know, budget does come into play. There are usually per seat costs associated with every one of these systems that we're talking about. And, you know, they're not cheap. Of course, the argument is always, if you talk to any one of these, is like, you know, one major sale a year and you've paid for this system. It's kind of like the overarching argument that all these companies would give you, which I guess technically is true, but it sounds like, quite frankly to me, a TV advertisement. So if I was a small company, let's just say I had a, you know, 5-person company or even an individual, I mean, it can help an individual. Yes, you can get by with making some kind of, you know, database on your own, but there's really no need to. There's web-based CRM systems and all of these things at the smaller side are definitely highly portable to another company. They all use in concept a relational database backend. And, you know, so I would, you know, do a search. I would have a few meetings if you're going to go on your own, I would have a few meetings with companies that based upon your search, you think meet your financial capability and the size requirement, because there's definitely ones that would never work in a huge enterprise, but will absolutely do fantastic work in a smaller. And they will say so. They'll say as much in their web pages and whatnot. And then, you know, take it from there. But the one, you know, I would also say just, you know, once again, it seems like a shameless plug, but that's the kind of stuff I talk about in my book too, because my book is very scenario driven. So it's like, you know, here's the setup of a scene. It's a meeting room and we're talking about setting up our requirements. This is what happened and this is why it messed up and what did we learn? And, you know, I think you really have to sit back and say, specifically, what am I trying to do? Am I trying to get more customers? Am I trying to make the customers that I have more happy, more satisfied? Am I trying to get my salespeople? And I'm generalizing here with the word salespeople. It could be lots of different things. Am I trying to get them to work better together? Am I trying to take manual processes that are, you know, human errors are just riddling the system, and am I trying to get rid of them? Am I trying to clean up data you know, and to what level of each one of those things are you trying to accomplish? Now, once you have that, I'm going to tell you right now, you've done a lot more work than a lot of people out there, because there are a lot of people out there that just buy the next shiny object because it's got really cool screens. And I'm sorry if I just offended anybody, but I don't mean it. Look, I do the same thing with, you know, your apps on your iPhone. It's like, wow, that looks cool. I'll download it. You don't want to do that here. You know, you want to take a step back and analyze these things. Because if done correctly, they do perform, and they do it better than a human or a set of manual processes could ever hope to do.
I guess that setup phase, like you mentioned, is the most important. What do you want to get out of it? And I think a lot of folks just say, we need a CRM system, stick it in there, don't really go into too much detail in terms of how it really will benefit the company, but they just get it because they hear CRM, must have it. And I suppose the next point we could go into is, how important is training, and how do you get people to get full value or benefit out of a CRM system in a business? Have you got a case study on that, or a process that you would typically go about to make CRM
many
system
case
becomes
studies,
part of the organization
structure? And I can write a book
structure.
On this topic by itself. The reality is that training is one of the core reasons systems fail. And it's not for the obvious, reasons. Many systems fail, and I mentioned it earlier, because adoption, right? And adoption fails for a few different reasons, but the big ones are paranoia to, why is the company implementing this system? What are they up to? Are they trying to find out is someone trying to steal my secret list of people? That's a big one. You know, two is, you know, I've been doing this for X amount of years and I am very successful on my own. I don't need your whiz bang system. And three, people are afraid that you're automating this to get rid of my career or get rid of my job. And any one of them, to use your word used earlier, can metastasize. See, I'm already using your buzzword for me here.
I like it.
And kill the success of your operation. You know, CRM systems at their core are sharing systems. And if somebody doesn't want to share their stuff and they think it's better to hoard their stuff rather than share their stuff, well, one, your training was either non-existent or you didn't train on the right topics. I mean, most people think about training as like, oh, we're going to teach them how to do these three switches and fill out this form. No, there's a training of, why are we doing this? And yes, we may say to people, you know, this other person at XYZ company, go through Michael to find them. Well, that's shouldn't be looked at negatively. That should be looked at like, wow, I didn't even know there was an opportunity over there at the company that I know. This other person found it. I'm going to benefit. And that has to be driven home, and it has to be delivered in such a way that it is consumed to be authentic. And if you don't do that, I'm going to tell you now, your system won't make it. You could have the best system, the best training. If you do not have people putting in good information, it will not work. And the other thing about training is the fact that when you go to a new CRM system, regardless of it's a mega system or a tiny system, you have to abandon all the previous methods that you used to use. If you still use two systems, or if some leader in some division or, you know, some outpost of your company that you have is still doing it some other way, your system will fail. And I'm using big words there. I mean, I'm powerful words, not big words. It will fail. Because what happens is, like a cancer, it will spread to the point of, well, if there's another system, that means there's most likely information that exists somewhere else that doesn't exist where in the core repository that you've just told the rest of the people at your company to go after. And once they realize that there's something else somewhere else, or your system isn't complete, then they're immediately going to say, well, then this is not the only place I have to go to. And they won't go to. They just won't. you know, you could write a, you know, a psychology paper on that. They just won't do it. And so the training, you know, the one thing I'll also say about my book, it's a technical topic. It's not a technical book. It's not intended. It's not, there is no test to be taken. This is, you're not going to, I don't think you're going to see most of this stuff on certifications or anything like that. This is much more about the whys and the training, the same thing. If you train on the technical and don't train on like the psychological reasons or the theoretical reasons why you're doing this new system and how it can benefit not just the company, but the user themselves, your system will fail. It will. You might not see it. You might have retired by the time it does, or you know, you may have moved on to another system because your board of directors has got so angry that we just spent $5 million on this thing and it doesn't improve anything. We're going to another system. And then you just play merry-go-round of system after system. So there are just steps. And that's also one of the things I said I was frustrated when I wrote this. You know, those are the things. It's just like the same stupid mistakes keep happening. And, you know, you'd mentioned earlier, like, you know, the CRM compared to an ERP, or how do you differentiate the two? Well, here's the thing. CRMs have become the larger CRMs. And I would say this even to the smaller ones, because they're capable too to tie into your, you know, your QuickBooks or whatever accounting system you use at your own smaller entity. You know, if CRMs are getting so unique because there's been nothing like them before, and people have a hard time putting them in their own little, you know, cubby on the wall, like this system does this and this system does this. Well, you know, any CRM system, big or small, is kind of like, and I would even say, even if I go back to saying people use Excel spreadsheets in their email system, well, think about it. Your Excel spreadsheet probably ties into your manual accounting process right now. You know, your email system ties into your, probably your invoicing process right now. You know, even if you write an invoice, you know, in an email, it straddles all of these things. So, you know, as you start to get technically into these things, you know, it's like pouring a bucket of, you know, paint all over your systems. It's everywhere. It's in every little nook and cranny. So you really have to treat it as something different. And just because you are a good salesperson, well, that's true. I'm glad you are a good salesperson, and I'm glad you can afford a CRM system now. But you have to open arms, hug it, and say, I'm going to do this new way. Because it will freight train you if you don't use it. Because you're, you know what? Unfortunately, your competition is. It's just a fact of the matter.
I guess you've brought up a couple of cool points there in terms of, you know, people make up an important part of CRMs. The technology, whether you're using Salesforce, HubSpot, or any of these other programs, you can do certifications. You can, you know, watch all of the videos in terms of which button to press, which knob to dial, etc. But getting people to work together, getting people to use it, getting people to get value out of it, those are soft skills. And I've seen it with implementing these large EPM mm-hmm. projects, that it's the people that make the difference. Whether you use Oracle, whether you use whatever, it's the ability of the people to actually take the ball and run with it when it comes to these. And I suppose some of the lessons that you'll talk about in your book are going to be, again, what not to do, how to get your team involved, how to get people on board, how to break yeah. down those silos and make them not feel like we're trying to take Absolutely. Your job or automate it, because it isn't about that. It's about adding more value to the business and giving you more time to do what you actually are supposed to be doing. I'm sounding like an SAP salesman now, but I guess that sort of covers it.
No, you're right. You're right. It's not obvious. You know, there, funny story, I will keep everyone anonymous, but I remember there was an implementation and it doesn't matter which CRM system it was. It happened to be Salesforce, but it doesn't matter. And the day after it went live, I mean, literally the day after it went live, the head of the company yelled down the hall. I was maybe, I don't know, 20 yards away. And the CEO said, Hudlow, they're not effing high-fiving me in the hallway right now. And I go, what? And, you know, we were on good terms. And I totally didn't understand the direction yet. So he repeated himself, the same thing. And he yelled it so, like, you know, everybody on the floor of this office could hear me. And I go, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I just spent $3 million on this thing. And I expected all of, you know, all the leaders of the firm to be high-fiving me. And I go, I swear to God, I go, what did you think you bought? You know, and I said, people need to start doing it. And I think, you know, and I look back at myself, it's one of my lessons that I learned. It's like, wow. Expectations, and it wasn't me, thank God, but, you know, I'll take responsibility for it since we're talking about it now. I said, the expectations when this person went through the contract process really weren't set. And the funny thing is that is a true story, and it truly did happen. And I don't know if that person was ever satisfied, because I think they may have thought they bought a wizard that is sitting in the back with, you know, with the big pointy hat and just making every problem go away. And as funny as that sounds, that's not 1,000 miles away from the root of a lot of problems with these systems as well. They have become so, you know, capable, and especially with the advent and the integration of AI, that particularly more experienced senior people that existed prior to all these mega systems, it's like they don't even know what to expect, you know, and how much is fantasy or not. And that's just a reality. Okay. That's not trying to blame anybody. That's just a reality. And along with the training, there has to be different levels of training for different types of people. And I know that's an obvious statement, but it becomes much more about what you should expect and what is reasonable. And, you know, there's another training path. It's kind of like what I call being a good corporate citizen, meaning share your stuff and don't just try to suck things out of the system. You know, you need to put it out. I would highly recommend companies think about some type of gamification for saving, putting information into the system to make it a little more appealing. Or maybe you build it into, there's a rewards and consequences with the year end with bonuses and things like that. But you really need, just like with a pump, you need to prime the pump, or with a car, you need to pump the pedal, you know, in the old days to get the engine going. You need to do that. Buying the system might be painful, but it's the easiest thing you're going to do as a leader to get a system in play.
Yeah. Let's go back to your book, because I want to get some highlights of what folks can expect when they buy it.
Okay.
And
sure,
obviously what you're talking about in a book, as you said, it's not the technical aspects, but these are some lessons, and here are some hard truths that you've learned over the years that hopefully people can avoid when they're implementing,
sure,
CRM systems into their business. So maybe just a couple of chapter highlights.
Sure. In no particular order, and they're not even going to be directly aligned to an individual chapter, but I can do that. I can look, it really, the book is intended to be not written from cover to cover, read from cover to cover. It's meant to be picked up and say, skim through it. Wow, that is applicable. I'm going to read the next 10 pages. And then you can put it back down and pick it back up, or, you know, do whatever you want. But the whole book, though, is relevant to different roles and different things in the life cycle of implementation, development, and operations of CRMs at a company. It would be applicable to, if you have a two-person company, probably not highly applicable, but anything larger than a handful or two of people, definitely applicable, all the way up to the tens of thousands, 100,000. So I'll give you an example that would be something that's directed towards a project manager that is responsible for getting a system out there to a new, whether it's the initial deployment or the progress of rolling it out to other entities within a larger entity. And this actually happened to myself. A few years ago, I'd been internally at a company challenged with getting other large global divisions to use the system, you know, the more the merrier, you know, and I got this, the largest division to agree that they were going to start to adopt the system. And that took many months to do because, once again, they had their own, they were a very efficient group. They had their own methodology. Everything was working well. You know, why change? You know, so I had to convince them of, well, we can still make this amazing methodology happen in the new system. But on top of that, when another division has an opportunity that you would never be aware of, you would know about it, or and vice versa. And you could, you know, do add-on work and things like that, or add-on sales. So I, after months of encouragement, the CEO of this division said, hey, come on, we're having our annual event. It happened to be in the West Coast of the US. And I flew out there, you know, they wined and dined, and it was all a great time. And I got up on, it was my time at a full conference. It was maybe 100 people. I got up on stage, and the second I got up on stage, the CEO, who was in the front room, stood up and walked out of the room to go do something else. And I looked at that, and I'm like, oh no. And I went through this great, well, I think it was great, presentation. Everybody was on board. And guess what? Everyone saw that visual in the first second when I took the stage, and the system never took off in that division. They paid for it. And, you know, they were, you know, trained, and it was customized for them, never took off because, and that's why I wrote the book. Now I can listen to my own lessons. There's two things I did. One, I don't know if I can be challenged with predicting or foreseeing, but I should have made that interactive with him on stage. Like, this is why we're doing it. Here's how it's going to look. This is what I, you know, from the other person, that was me imitating someone you don't even know. But, you know, hey, this is what I expect of you. This is what the system's going to do. This is how we're going to do it. I made it about the system that we were developing instead of the system that this leader thought we would do and that they would just gravitate to. Once again, somewhat of, hey, there's a wizard behind the curtain and everyone's going to want to use it. Well, I made a big mistake there. And I had buy-in, but it was conditional buy-in. And I didn't know that. And maybe the leader didn't even know that. I don't think it was done maliciously, but it killed years worth of work. And I truly, it really did do that. The other thing
I'm just gonna stop you on there, because I think in terms of the book, then it's not just for the people in organizations implementing it. This could be useful for people who are actually CRM salesmen or salespeople, and or responsible for making sure that these are that the, what they're selling is actually successfully implemented in a business and the goes same, the distance.
Yeah, the same story aligns also with a CEO or a board of directors or whomever in that same story, because I'm saying to people, hey, don't be that person. Just because you paid for a system doesn't mean the system is successful. It needs you to coach it and nurture it, you know, infinitum. And the other thing is, as a piggyback to that same story is that leader, despite my warnings, never sunsetted their old methods. So they were telling people to do things in the new system, but they're still telling people to submit the XYZ report on every Friday before lunch. And people are just like, no way in hell I'm doing two things. No way. So that's an example. So there's just a whole scenario around that. And then I also go into the theory and some, you know, consultative buzzwords of what could be done and how things could be done in those examples. You know, the other thing I would say as another example, and I just alluded to it, is an example of when you still allow old things to exist, old systems or old processes to exist when the new one has come online. There has to be a line drawn in the sand. And I probably have 100 examples of this. This is one of the major offenders that people don't say, starting March 1st, me as the leader, I am not taking anything outside of this system. You want to be paid for it on your bonus at the year end, it better be in the system. If you want to talk about it at the team meeting, it better be in the system. Now, conversely, I can speak to a few instances where leaders took me at my word before things took off and did do this, and they were enormously successful. Because if you are a salesperson and it's the Friday morning, you know, wake up coffee call with all of your competition or all of your internal competition on a call, and the leader starts reading down the list and Michael has the biggest sale of the week, you know, whatever. And somebody goes, well, wait a minute, I made a bigger sale. No, you didn't. Don't even talk about it. I mean, and you have to be that hardcore, but that happens about once and then that's over, and then people take off. And there's a chart that I speak to is that if you can imagine a pie chart, and a salesperson, a professional service person, whomever uses the CRM, in their head, I'm just going to make up the numbers, they allot, let's just say 10% of their work week to administrative stuff, time report, expense report, those kind of things. Inside of that little 10% slice of pie is the things that we're talking about right now with interacting with a CRM system. If you are going to deploy a new CRM system and you make that 10% wedge 11%, your system will fail. It just will. If anyone perceives that what you're asking them to be harder than what they used to do, it fails. Okay, so if you are going down the development path and you're saying, wow, this is going to take an extra, you know, no, stop, rewind, figure that out. Figure it out to be more streamlined. The absolute worst you can do is keep that 10% slice at 10%. But the only way that would work is if you dramatically increase visually, measurably, the output. You know,
but Michael, this sounds like it's not just applicable to CRM folks implementation. This could be on any SaaS software as a service.
Was the challenge I had when I wrote the book.
That's a nice challenge to have, that these learnings can be moved over onto other industries. And I think anyone listening, if they are in sales in terms of CRM, EPM, ERP, they'd probably be good learnings, because I doubt there are that many books which talk about, you know, how not to mess up these processes.
That's right.
So I think it'd be quite a good learning for folks who are in sales in particular, how not to mess up or how to be successful by not following these.
And you know, it's funny that you highlighted that, and I'm glad you said that, because when I told you I wrote the first sentence regarding this book, I was actually doing an SAP assignment at that time. And I'm not trying to pick on them. It just happened to be the case. And that's even why the color of the book, you can see it over my shoulder there. It's blue and white. It was initially, I'm like, this is a Salesforce book. And then as I wrote it, I'm like, this is a CRM book. It's not Salesforce. It's. And then when I was done, I'm like, you know what? This could just be how not to mess up a system book. So, but no, you are right. It does kind of, you know, transcend or go across all these other things. The intent was not that, to be honest, but it certainly is applicable. Absolutely.
Well, there's your second book. You've done most
third,
of the work.
That would be my third.
Just third one, just change the cover and change CRM to systems. And I think you've got another best, because honestly,
ERP edition. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that might work well. Michael, tons of interesting topics we're talking about. I think we could jabber on for quite a while
this.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut it off there, and I'm going to ask two things. One is, what is something interesting about you that we don't know, or that most readers wouldn't know from reading your book, other than being an expert at CRM? I see you've got some cool art in the background there.
Yeah, I'm pretty eclectic. The art way over on this side is my own. The one directly behind me, where it looks like I have spikes out of my head, that's a Brito. I've got some sculpture. I also, as you see over here, I got comic books I collect on the wall that are graded. You know, the thing, I think what's interesting, well, to me it's interesting, you know, a few years ago, my wife and I started to think about our eventual retirement. My wife is French. So we kind of split our time right now. So thank God for the advent of remote working. So I split my time pretty equally between the south of France, I guess you want to call it, and the Provence area. Here where I am right now in southern Florida, and then also in the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. So I'm kind of always bebopping around with my wife and our two dogs. And so I truly have found that the experience, while it sounds more glamorous than it is, because no matter where we are, we're working. So it's not, you know, it's like we're jet setting around and doing nothing. But I've pretty much always been a global player in the business world. I love networking. And I would say that to anybody listening to this, you have an open door, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'll supply with email and reach out to me. I would love to meet you. No sales, just talk. That's how I wrote this first book and the second book, is meeting people, learning about experiences, and then thinking of, you know, what happened and how to get yourself out of it.
Well, I'm going to put links to where folks can buy your book. Cool. And your LinkedIn details. So that will all be in the descriptor of this podcast so they can get hold of you. But Michael, thank you so much for your time. It's really good to talk about some stories on CRM. And yeah, I think we'll probably have another chat later in the year when you bring out your second book and we can talk a little bit more in detail about that.
A lot of fun and a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
Come chat with Nicholas. He'll listen to you. Then he'll laugh and then he'll cry with you. It's all in a safe space for you to speak your truth.